What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 104. Today, we're going to be talking about milk and all the various kind of components of it. Talk about the fats, carbs, proteins, if it's healthy or not, all what type of milk you should buy, all that type of stuff. But first, we're going to have the article of the week, and Tom picked this one. It's about glyphosate, which is the kind of pesticide, herbicide that's sprayed on all the crops in the world, and kind of the problems with that. So, Tom, do you want to kind of go into the article of the week?
Yeah, so this one is Mexico is beginning to phase out the use of the herbicide glyphosate. And we've talked about glyphosate in numerous other podcasts. It's been linked to cancer. And by link, I mean even the CDC has it as a probable carcinogenic. I think there's over 1,000 studies linking glyphosate and cancer. So there's a really, really strong link. The only thing is it's the actual product name is Roundup is what most people know it by. And Monsanto is one of the biggest companies out there. Like, they are like a world domination corporation. So it's really hard to get one of their like main products banned. Like worldwide. So Mexico is doing the right thing now. They're stopping the import of it. They're trying to start stop using it altogether. And by 2024, they will no longer be using it at all or allowing foods that contain it to be imported into their country either. So that's a gigantic move. Hopefully the U.S. will follow suit because, I don't want to be eating that food. I don't want glyphosate anywhere near me. And that just goes to show, like, oh, hey, like, a lot of our produce comes from Mexico. That's a good thing, because at least they're not using this shitty product.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge move. I just wonder what type of pushback they face, like, you know, behind the scenes. Because I'm sure there were some pretty, like, tense meetings, you know?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of lobbyists that were pushing for the opposite. But hey, at least the good guys finally won one.
Yeah. No, glyphosate, man, it sucks. I know. There's a whole, like, health concern that Tom mentioned, which is links to cancer. And from a whole other perspective that doesn't get talked about a lot, in my opinion, is, or at least me and Tom talk about it sometimes, how the food available today is just less nutritious. And we talk about soil health and how the soil just isn't as healthy. And that's where all the plants get their nutrients is from the soil. And then, obviously, the animals eat the plants. It's a whole cycle. But one of the things glyphosate does that doesn't get talked about enough is that it binds to minerals in the soil and makes it inaccessible to the plants. So things like magnesium is a huge mineral that is deficient in most people's diets. I would say over 90% of people's diet are deficient in magnesium, and that's partly because of glyphosate. It binds to magnesium in the soil and the plant can't absorb it. Therefore, the plant doesn't absorb it, the animal doesn't get it from the plant, and we don't get it from the animal. It's a whole cycle that we're deficient in, and I think that's partly because of glyphosate, and no one really talks about that angle, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good thing. I'm glad you brought that up. And so they, the reason that they ban it is because of health reasons and environmental reasons. So I'm not exactly sure what the environmental reasons are. I don't know if it has something to do with what you just went into. They don't really get into that in the article, and I read a couple other articles that said the same thing, but they never really got into it. I mean, maybe it's just breathing in this toxin through the air. I mean, that's pretty bad for the environment.
Yeah, no, it could be a bunch of things. But yeah, so that's Article of the Week. We're both pro getting rid of glyphosate. There are other herbicides and pesticides around, more natural products that can be used. So I'm definitely down for that. If you want to check out the article, you can go to tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We'll have the Article of the Week linked to this post. So just search, like, Podcast 104 or search milk, and you can find that article if you want to read it yourself. But yeah, with that being said, let's get into this week's topic, which is milk. And I guess just to be honest, like, this podcast wasn't supposed to be on milk. It was supposed to be on lactose intolerance, because that's a huge topic. You know, a lot of people suffer from that, and a lot of people don't know really what the mechanism is. And so I initially started doing research on that, and I found out real quick that I really don't give a shit about lactose intolerance. You know, I was having a real hard time just finding the desire to research it, and probably because I do fine with milk. You know, I'm not lactose intolerant at all. So I initially just went down this rabbit hole with just milk, and I was like, man, I just was learning all this stuff about milk that I didn't know. And I was like, oh, I want to talk about milk in this podcast. And I think milk gets run, like, drugged through the mud a lot, even in damn near any community. In the vegan community, obviously, the plant-based world, and even in the keto world and the carnivore world, milk is kind of the kind of forgotten stepchild. You know, it is 100% animal-based product, but it's still kind of shunned in damn near every community. But in my opinion, and I already talked to Tom about this, just thinking about it, I really think for people following the standard American diet, which in our little community, that's not any of us, right? All of us are low carb or at least whole foods, but we're a very small circle. I think the vast majority of people are still following the standard American diet. And you can just refer to last week's podcast, which said, you know, over 80% of people are metabolically unhealthy. Obviously, they're following the standard American diet. But for those people, I really think milk is damn near the healthiest thing they get every day. And we talked about that a little bit, right, Tom? You kind of agree with that, right? You see my point?
Yeah, if you're doing milk and cereal for breakfast, milk is by far the best. If you're doing a sandwich for lunch, I mean, maybe you're doing a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, milk's better than any of that. Maybe you're doing, like, a deli sandwich. I mean, most cold cuts and, like, you know, deli meat isn't really the best meat. I would still say milk is better than that. And then whatever you're doing for dinner, if you're doing, like, a chicken breast and some, like, rice or something like that, I'm laying out, like, a pretty, like, healthy, like, dinner. Standard American diet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the milk is by far the most nutritious thing there.
Yeah. So I just kind of wanted to get into that. Like, everyone bashes milk. I'm going to go through, and not to say that milk is untouchable. There are aspects of milk that need to be discussed, and we might do that in another podcast, talk about various types of milk, talk about milk allergies. Like, if that's something that interests you, let me know, and, you know, I'll look into it. But I didn't want that to be this week's podcast. I want to actually really talk about what is in milk, just all the little details, because I find it very interesting. And I didn't know I'd find it interesting until I read these papers, and I just was honestly fascinated by it. So,
well, I try to warn you about that whole lactose intolerance, like, rabbit hole. There's, like, so many angles to it, and it gets so scientific. Like, unless you really, really want to know, man, you're reading a lot of boring-ass, like, papers.
Yeah, so boring, because if it was just simply lactose intolerance, that's pretty straightforward. But when you talk about a milk allergy, which is really, I think, what's going on with a lot of people, that's like a whole other ball of wax. And I was just like, once it starts talking about the various, like, antibodies and the proteins in milk that are kind of bioactive, I'm like, you know what? I'm out. I was like, I don't care enough, you know?
Well, yeah, I tried that. I went down that rabbit hole, I think, a few years ago, trying to figure out, like, what types of dairy I can eat and which ones I can't. And pretty much, like, I just settled through, like, just good old self-experimentation. It's like, I can do butter, and that's it. Everything else is, like, kind of hit or miss, so I just kind of stick to butter and just pretty much avoid everything else except for, like, you know, some cheese on, like, a special occasion, some milk, like, maybe it's an ice cream, but, I mean, we're talking about stuff, like, not even once a month.
Yeah, exactly. So, just to start off, kind of, what's good about cow's milk? Really, like, all the vitamins and minerals in it. Like, obviously, it's a great source of calcium. Everyone knows that. But it's also a great source of phosphorus. And Tom's talked about that a few times, how important that is, how abundant that is, and it's lacking in a lot of people's diet. It's a good source of selenium as well. And in this current climate with COVID and everyone worried about that, selenium is a key factor of our immune system. And honestly, low selenium is linked to high COVID death. So don't do that, obviously. It's a good source of B12, which is a critical nutrient. It's a good source of actual vitamin D. It's not like fortified with vitamin D, like real vitamin D, bioavailable vitamin D, which is super important. And again, in this community, I was using this climate with COVID, low vitamin D is linked to higher risk of death from COVID. So you want to get your vitamin D up. And all these numbers I'm going to talk about now are going to be kind of general numbers because the composition of milk is continuously changing. You know, it depends on the breed of the cow, the feeding strategies, the management of the cow itself, the lactation stage, the season even. So these are all kind of broad numbers. So don't get me pinned down on like 0.1% because the shit changes. But
before you get into that, I just want to point out like selenium, vitamin D, vitamin B12, vitamin B2, like riboflavin. Well, except for B12, like selenium, riboflavin, and vitamin D, those aren't in a lot of foods. Like, it's kind of rare that you find something that has those, or at least in, like,
decent amounts.
Quantities. Yep. Yeah, like, you got to be eating, like, a lot of liver and stuff like that. You got to be eating a lot of organ meats, which I know a lot of people don't do because they don't really like the taste or just don't have the access to it. So if you can get something that's got selenium, riboflavin, vitamin D, and it's something that you like, I don't know. A lot of people love milk. I think we're designed to love milk. Yeah. So this is a great food source for those nutrients.
100%. Yeah, I should have mentioned actually how those are fairly hard to come by in a standard diet. You know what I mean? Those are going to be low for the vast majority of people.
I mean, even me and you, like, eating, like, a carnivore diet. Like, yeah. I'm not eating that much liver anymore.
Yeah, me either.
I get my vitamin D from the sun. I'm in the sun all day. So I'm not really too worried about that. But, yeah, like, some of those other things, like, hey, you got to kind of look out for those.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, I kind of want to break down the macros first. So milk is about 3% protein, and it's a real, real high-quality protein, great amino acids that are extremely bioavailable. It's about 80% casein protein and 20% whey protein, and both are great sources of protein. But a lot of people have gonna heard of whey before. Not too many people have heard of casein. And the reason you've heard of whey, and the reason it's usually isolated out of milk and put in powders and used by like bodybuilders, is because it's really high in BCAAs, also called branched chain amino acids. And the one that's most important specifically is leucine. And people like that because it triggers muscle protein synthesis. And obviously gym bros are out there. Everyone wants as much muscle as possible. You need to trigger muscle protein synthesis to get muscle. So that's kind of the reason whey powder is kind of more popular than casein powder. But that's not a knock on casein at all. It's still a very great, complete protein, complete amino acid profile, and is just honestly super high quality. And
so when you say 3%, what do you mean by that? By like weight?
Well, yeah, because it's 88% water, because pretty much everything is more water than anything else. You know what I mean? So,
okay, so you're not talking 3% of the calories are coming from protein.
No. Yeah, exactly. I guess I should have started off with 88% water, you know, but that's what it is. Yeah. So it's whole milk is 4% fat, and the fat ratio in milk represents a good ratio of how someone's diet should look, in my opinion. So it's about 70% saturated fat, 11% of that is MCT, and half of that is butyrate. And I don't think a lot of people would ever, I mean, you see people like, oh, let's add MCT oil to my coffee. MCT oil is like a big thing. Butyrate and, you know, hydroxybutyrate, which is a ketone body, that's like hot supplements these days, right? Like, you know, people spend a lot of money on that.
Oh, yeah. Butyrate's like the darling right now. I mean, that's one of the main things that a lot of people that talk about the benefits of fiber is that we turn fiber into butyrate.
Yep.
So if we can just skip the fiber and just straight get butyrate, like, hey, why not? That's got to be even better.
Exactly. So, but nobody would tell you that you would get these essential fatty acids, these real high quality, healthy fatty acids in milk, but they are in milk. And 28% of the fat is monounsaturated. 25% of that is oleic acid, which is the same oil, same fat you find in olive oil. And then about 2% is polyunsaturated fat. So you can see the predominant fat is saturated, and then the second most is mono, and then you have a tiny bit of polyunsaturated fat. And that's exactly how you want your diet to look, in my opinion. And I think it's just, it's great how that's mirrored in milk.
Yeah, just to kind of go into that a little bit. So the primary fat that our body uses as a fuel source is going to be saturated fat. That's why you want that to be the majority of your diet. You want it to be mostly saturated fat. that 2% polyunsaturated fat is perfect too. Because, like, we talk about how essential fatty acids, we need to get those from our diet. They're only essential because our body doesn't make them. That doesn't mean we need to get a 50% ton of our fat from them. We exactly. don't need a lot of them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you really don't want a lot of them. A few cases having high omega-3 is great, but omega-3s are still very unstable as well. We'll go into that later on. But so I didn't know this little fact I learned. There are actually 400 different types of fat found in milk, making it the most complex natural fat source on the planet. And now the vast majority of these fatty acids are found in trace amounts, and only 15 are found at higher than 1% concentration. And the 15 are going to be the ones, you know, you've heard of: stearic acid, oleic acid, palmitic acid, stuff like that. And half of this fat comes from the feed, so what they give the cow to eat, and the other half is produced from
microbial
holy shit, I cannot read that at all. Yeah, microbial activity in the rumen of the cow. And I've made a few comments before talking about cows and how you can damn near feed a cow anything and they'll live for the most part, because you're not really, the cows really don't eat what we feed them. They eat what the bacteria in their gut produce. And so when I read this fact, I was actually really surprised, because I thought way less than half of the fat in the milk would come from the feed itself. I was assuming like 80 to 90% of the fat would just come from the bacteria in the rumen, but it turns out half of it actually comes from the diet itself, which is actually really big. And that's going to kind of show later on that the feed of the cow does matter in the quality of the milk. This is why. And milk has an omega 6 to 3 ratio of 2, which is really good. And the two forms are primarily linoleic acid and alpha linolenic acid. And omega 6 to 3 ratio is something that's talked about a lot. And you want to try and get your diet close to 1 to 1 as possible. I really, that's damn near impossible for the vast, vast majority of people. So getting it as close to 1 to 1 as you can, 2 to 1 as you can, is great. So milk's a good quality, you know, ratio. And you do find some trace amounts of trans fat in milk and dairy in general, but don't be worried. Not all trans fats are created equal. The trans fats found in nature are perfectly healthy. And one of the major ones in milk is CLA, conjugated linoleic acid, which is extremely healthy. Like, people supplement with that for the health effects. And we, I don't know, we might do a podcast on CLA eventually at some point, but people worry that, you know, all trans fats are the same, but the trans fats created from hydrogenation, which is made in a lab, which is something chemists created, are not good for us, are not healthy at all, and that's why they're banned in the vast majority of restaurants and just worldwide. People know trans fats are bad, but like I said, the ones produced by cows and other ruminants are perfectly healthy. And so the carbs in milk, it's about 5% whole milk is sugar, and most of it is in the form of lactose, which gets broken down by the enzyme lactase into glucose and galactose. Galactose then gets broken down by our liver into glucose. And this is actually one of the reasons why, like, this specific carb makeup, milk can be a good post-workout shake or a post-workout kind of glycogen refeeding system, in my opinion at least. And this has been shown in studies. The glucose from, you know, lactose goes straight to our muscles to replenish the glycogen lost there. And the galactose goes solely to the liver and gets converted into glucose there. And that replenishes the liver glycogen loss. So it kind of hits both spots where you're going to lose glucose. So that's one of the reasons why, if you can handle lactose, you know, you see those commercials, you know, chocolate milk for post-workout, there is actually some science behind that.
Yeah, and usually when they're looking at a study to see how effective a protein powder is, they're testing it against chocolate milk just to see, like, okay, here's a cheap product. Can this protein powder that's going to cost 10 times more, does it promote more muscle protein synthesis? Does it produce more gains than this cheap alternative? Mm-hmm. And that's usually what they, like, match it up against.
Yep. And so, yeah, you can see that milk has everything you need, you know, protein, carbs, and fats, all pretty good ratios, all pretty good quality. But the only thing it doesn't have is fiber. And in my opinion, that just shows how unnecessary and unessential fiber really is. And it's not like this milk's any different than the breast milk you'd feed your children. There's no fiber in breast milk either. So fiber is just completely non-essential. Would you agree?
Definitely, because especially, like we talked about earlier, like with the butyrate, that's like the major benefit of fiber. Well, there's other ways to get butyrate. And also, if you're on a low-carb diet, your body will produce beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is even better than just straight butyrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So there's plenty of other ways around it. That argument for fiber that's used mainly by the plant-based community is just not good, straight up. And honestly, our body can even use amino acids to make butyrate. So we don't need fiber at all, in my opinion. And so doing this research, I stumbled across a website. It was a milk composition database. And I'll have the link on the website so you can click through that if you were interested. But it was very, very interesting website that listed all the different metabolites in milk. And I asked Tom, like, I was like, well, how many metabolites do you think are in milk? And I think, did you say, well, like 100 or 200 or something like that?
It was something like that. Let's just say 200.
Yeah, 200. And I understand metabolites is a little open-ended, a little confusing. What am I talking about? So it's literally just everything you can think of that's in milk. And the number is 2,300. And I was just like, wow, it's crazy how many different things are in milk. And so I just pulled some of the ones that I thought were interesting that I don't think people would think that was in milk. So there's creatine in milk. And we've talked about how vital creatine is for a lot of things. There's carnitine in milk, which you need to actually mobilize any fat in your body. There's carnosine in milk. And we talked about that a few weeks back, how healthy that stuff is. There's cholesterol in milk. That's an essential nutrient. There's vitamin C in milk in actually like pretty good quantities. I don't think people really would think of that. You know, whenever someone talks about vitamin C, they talk about fruits. No one talks about milk, but it's in milk. There's a
I didn't know that.
Yeah, right. And most people did. I didn't. There's a good amount of glycine in milk. And Tom's talked about this, right? How important glycine is and collagen, that type of stuff, right?
Yeah, your body uses it to make up things like glutathione, creatine, and a whole bunch of other like essential nutrients.
And it's hard to get usually.
Yeah, usually you can only get it from like collagen, like bone, connective tissue like skin, or if you're eating like the collagen surface on like a chicken wing, something like that. Mm-hmm. Like stuff that I don't eat that much of,
but it's in milk, right?
Yeah,
which is great. There's biotin, which is B6. I know a lot of people are interested in that. There's a ketone body beta hydroxybutyrate we talked about earlier, how beneficial that stuff is. And there's actual vitamin D, you know, bioavailable vitamin D, not fortified vitamin D, even though you do find fortified milk, but there's actual real vitamin D in milk. So yeah, I would recommend checking out that website. It's very interesting. You can get lost, obviously, 2,300 different, you know, variables to look at, but those are some of the ones I pulled. And
I did not know there were even 2,300 metabolites.
Yeah, it's crazy because it goes through all the, you know, vitamins and minerals and even like isomers of things, which are, it's like the same structure, but a different shape. Like it's just, it's very interesting. But yeah, like we haven't been drinking milk for that long from an evolutionary perspective. Like our argument a lot of the time is from an evolution basis, and you know, the argument to eat meat is literally millions of years old, but you don't have that same argument for milk. So we started drinking milk about 8,000 years ago. And for perspective, the real like start of agriculture and the real start of heavily eating plant material started about 10,000 years ago. So it's even newer than agriculture, but you know, it's in the same, you know, time frame at least. And from a nutrient perspective, cow and human milk are calorically similar. Cow's milk has about 3 times as much protein, 4 times as much calcium, and overall more minerals, except for iron, than human milk. And they contain the same amount of IGF-1, and the IGF-1 in both types of milk are identical. And I mentioned specifically IGF-1, and that's insulin-like growth factor 1. There's different type of growth factor, that's why this one's just labeled 1. But because it gets brought up a lot in the papers I read, and they attribute this to the reason why milk is so beneficial for early development in children, and that the children that drink milk tend to be taller, bigger, and stronger than children who don't. And they don't know if it's, it could just be literally an energy thing, that there is just more calories and protein in milk than, like, you know, say a soy milk, almond milk, some sort of plant-based alternative. But they did know or did mention a lot of the time that drinking milk does elevate IGF-1 levels. And IGF-1 is just a growth factor. So I think a lot of people out there have heard of human growth hormone. That's a PED that's used by athletes and also used just by people who want to live, or I guess live optimally, maybe I should say, or stay as young as they can for as long as they can. And one of the main benefits of HGH isn't actually from human growth hormone. It's from what human growth hormone does to our liver. So HGH goes to our liver and tells it to produce IGF-1, and then IGF-1 is what promotes the rebuilding of collagen. It promotes the muscle growth, all that type of stuff. So IGF-1 is pretty cool. If you want to learn more about that, read about milk. I didn't know they would talk so much about IGF-1, and the only reason I know a little bit about IGF-1 is from like the bodybuilding world, because that's a drug used to grow, and I just thought it was pretty interesting. You know, did you think that was in milk?
No, I didn't. I figured there was going to be foods in it that would activate some of the insulin growth factors, but I didn't know that it would actually contain that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not by itself.
Yeah, not a lot.
And yeah, just to go on what you were talking about earlier about how like children grow a lot bigger, taller, the ones that consume milk. Yeah, it probably has something to do with the hormones that are activated. But just going back to like the jaw episode that we did a few weeks back about how like Weston A. Price's idea, like, hey, you need proper nutrition. We just mentioned all these different essential minerals and, you know, the high quality protein and stuff like that that's going to be in it. If you don't have those things, you don't have those building materials, your body can't grow. So you're just giving your body all the materials it possibly needs, all those minerals, all that protein to grow. So, like, yeah, that's not going to be a limiting factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So just to like touch on it briefly, what about people who are lactose intolerant? So white people from Europe, like European origins, tend to do the best with dairy, with only about 5% being lactose intolerant, whereas as high as 95% of various African and Asian communities are lactose intolerant. So that's like a huge variation. It says worldwide it's about 60-65% are lactose intolerant. And I think that has to do mainly with like there's a billion people in China, so it's going to skew the average. But you know, a lot of people are lactose intolerant. In my opinion, and this is just my own thinking, I believe this has a lot to do with sun exposure and evolutionary pressure. So people with ancestors that lived near the equator had access to adequate sun all year round and didn't need to rely on dietary sources of vitamin D. These people didn't have the evolutionary pressure to keep that lactase enzyme all their lives. People who lived far from the equator, like up north in Europe, don't have access to sun in adequate amounts all year round to produce enough vitamin D. And so they had the pressure to find a dietary source, you know? So having a quality dietary source like milk gave them enough source, or excuse me, another source of this vitamin D. And this was a pressure to keep this lactase enzyme throughout their adult years. And that's why you don't find a lot of lactose intolerance in the European countries. So that makes sense to you?
It does, especially when you think like cows are all over the world. Everybody has cows with them. Like beef, everybody eats beef. It's not like there isn't cows in Asia. It's not like there's not cows in like Africa. Mm-hmm. Like everybody's been has domesticated cows for a very, very long time. So, yeah, it is kind of strange that white people, like European ancestry, like they can handle it well while the rest of the world can't. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense when you think about the vitamin D argument.
Yeah. So here's a quote that's kind of from one of the studies I read talking about that a little bit. So, quote, in some populations, this has been facilitated by selection for genes that regulate lactase, the enzyme responsible for lactose digestion in the small intestine. Among populations of European descent, as well as those with pastoralist histories in Central and South Asia and East and West Africa, alleles associated with continual lactase production are common, releasing the age constraint of milk consumption, end quote. So you can see, you know, there's that pressure there, and you can pretty much just tell our body to keep that gene on and produce lactase your entire life. So that's really what's going on there. And that's not to say everyone should drink milk, you know, even though I do think it's a quality source, like I've mentioned already. But in my opinion, dairy consumption is context sensitive. Like, it really depends on the situation. And I think that's true for a lot of different things, but nobody really wants to talk about that nowadays. You know, they kind of just want the black and white, yes and no, is it good or bad? You know, well, kind of, it depends. So, are you lactose intolerant? Don't drink dairy. Why? Because the sugar, lactose, and dairy will not get broken down in the small intestines like it should. It'll reach the large intestine and get fermented by the bacteria there, resulting in the bad effects of lactose intolerance like gas, bloating, and diarrhea. So not a good thing. If that's you, don't drink milk. Or another case, are you insulin resistant or diabetic? Don't drink dairy. So the sugar fat protein combo in dairy raises insulin dramatically, more than simple white bread, and that's been shown in studies. And that can further promote insulin resistance. There is no denying that milk is very energy dense. And diabetes in the most simple form is the disease of too much energy in the form of stored body fat. So if you're, you know, 500 pounds, maybe don't drink milk 3 times a day, right? Cut that out and see what happens. Lose some weight, and then maybe you can reintroduce milk later on.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one because, like, milk is designed to make babies grow. It's designed to turn baby calves into big fat cows. Like, it is designed to make you get as fat and as big as possible. Mm-hmm. It's designed to, like, as the ultimate growth food, pretty much. And it's also, like, since it's a liquid, you don't get those same satiety signals that you do from eating, from chewing, or, you know, eating a steak, something like that. So it's really easy to consume a ton of milk without even really realizing it.
Exactly.
Like, it's going to give you the same satiety signals as a glass of water, basically.
Yep. So it's just, be careful. You know, you're that overweight, don't drink milk. And another one I thought of, like, do you suffer from autoimmune conditions, like, which is really leaky gut? Then don't drink dairy, because dairy contains various proteins that can trigger an autoimmune response via cellular mimicry. And if you want to learn more about that, go look for a Keto for Autoimmune Disease. We have a podcast on cellular mimicry and how that works. But, you know, if that's you, you know, you suffer from, say, Crohn's, maybe don't drink milk. But are you insulin sensitive, not lactose intolerant, and don't have a leaky gut? Then I would say drink dairy. The high quality of the protein and fat and rich source of vitamins and minerals are extremely healthy and can promote quality muscle gains and just increase your overall health. And it's true that milk raises insulin, but insulin doesn't have to be feared. It just has to be properly managed. And in my opinion, milk can be a powerful tool in a weightlifter's arsenal. Like the golden age of bodybuilding, think of Arnold Schwarzenegger, all those guys in the 70s and 80s, they had a simple diet of steak, eggs, and milk. And it worked. Like in the bodybuilding community, at least not really nowadays because, you know, it's just times have changed. But when I first started, it was drink a gallon of milk a day if you wanted to grow. It was an easy way to get a couple thousand extra calories, a couple hundred grams of protein, easy. And it worked. You know, there's no doubt about it. And yeah, a quick side note. Tom, do you remember the kid in high school who was really skinny, like sophomore year, and then like took a bunch of steroids and like blew up to 250 pounds? He's trained with us at Extreme a couple times.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I don't remember his name.
I don't either. But I remember that's something he did. I mean, besides all the steroids, but he said he drank a gallon of milk a day. You know, like it was something that it was known, you know, whatever, 20 years ago, that's kind of what you did. And
there you have a friend from college that did the same thing. That fool used to be just like twig skinny and then like put on like 25 pounds like within a year after he started doing that.
Yeah.
It works.
It does work. Yeah, there's no doubt. And there's an argument that we are the only species to drink another species milk. And yeah, that's true. But we are also the only species with cell phones. You know, like we've leveled up and learned ways to manipulate our environment for better and for worse. And I would argue that taming wild cows and eventually drinking their milk is for the better. And that's just my opinion. So if you choose to drink milk, which milk should you drink? And so I say drink whole milk, or in my case, what I do is I drink half and half, which is just half whole milk and half milk cream, which is just milk fat. So it's just more calories. Like right now, I'm just trying to put on pounds. So I'll drink just half and half post-workout with my meat, like with my ground beef. And it's a good way to put on weight, you know, like we said. And
so is there more, are there more minerals, more, there's probably more vitamins in that cream than there is in that milk, right? Just because of the water content?
Yeah, exactly. So I like it because one, it tastes better and it has just way more calories. So I'm just trying, you know, obviously to put on pounds right now, but a lot of those nutrients are in the fat. So the more fat you have, the more nutrients you're going to have, at least the fat soluble ones, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. And, so don't drink skim milk. Skim milk, pretty much like fat-free milk and grains, is how farmers fatten up pigs. And we have a very similar GI tract to pigs, so that's how we're going to get fat too. Just think of skim milk and grains, aka cereal. You eat that every day and you'll be fat too. So the real trick with milk is don't do skim, because that's actually not milk. That's its own human created thing of just sugar and protein. The fat and all the nutrients in the fat kind of help balance the milk out. And something I found out is there really is a nutritional difference between organic milk and non-organic milk. And mainly it's in the quality of the fat. So organic milk had 18% higher levels of CLA, which is a good thing. And organic milk has a more favorable omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. So remember earlier I said it was 2-1. That was for organic milk. Conventional feeding is closer to 6-1. So it's not as good of a ratio. And here's a quote outlining that from a study. Again, I'll link it on the website. So, quote, this study confirms earlier findings that milk from cows consuming significant amounts of grass and legume-based forages contain less linoleic acid and other omega-6 fatty acids and higher concentrations of alpha-linolenic acid and CLA and the long-chain omega-3s EPA and DPA compared to cows lacking routine access to pasture and fed substantial quantities of grains, end quote. So that's pretty clear. You know, that's a win for organic once again.
So when you say organic, are you just talking about organic like corn and soy, or are you talking about grass-fed?
No, grass-finished? No. It's just organic. So okay. It's not 100% grass-fed, no.
Okay, so those numbers most likely would be even better if you were looking at pasture-raised or 100% grass-fed.
Yeah. That's a lot harder to find with dairy. It's easier to find that with beef. But yeah, this is just organic because in the dairy community, just having an organic dairy farm like means you need to treat the cows better as far as giving them more access to the pasture. And that kind of results in the better omega-3 to 6 ratio, even though they do still eat like organic soy and organic corn, stuff like that. And like I said, like this is a win for organic milk, but I don't want to get caught up too much on the omega-3 to 6 ratio. Because it's really the amount of omega-3 and omega-6 fat in milk is like so low that like the overall ratio doesn't matter that much. So because I don't want to damn conventional milk just because. Like I think in the community, bashing grain-finished beef is popular. Bashing anything that's not organic is popular. But there's just I don't know. The fact of the matter is not everyone has access to good organic quality nutrients or quality like products. And if conventional milk is the only thing you have, do not worry about that 6-1 ratio. You know what I mean? It's not going to kill you. And
yeah, we both preach all the time. It's like, do the best you can afford. So like if you can only afford like, you know, the conventional milk, then go with that. Like you shouldn't be going broke because you have to get, you know, the best milk out there, the $15 a gallon milk. Like you shouldn't be going broke because of that. And then at the same time, like, this shouldn't scare you away. It's like, well, I can't afford that milk, so maybe I shouldn't even try this diet. It's like, no, just do the best that you can afford.
Exactly, yeah. So if you can, the milk you should get is organic whole milk. That's the way to go. That's what you should do. And yeah, man, that's all the stuff I learned about milk. It's a great quality source of a bunch of nutrients that a bunch of people are deficient in, especially people following the standard American diet, which is most people out there. So yeah, man, everyone bashes milk, and I kind of wanted to defend it this week.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot. I didn't know that there was, like, vitamin C. Like, that was kind of, like, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really expecting there to be any of that. And, yeah, there's a lot of other, was it 2,300 nutrients or metabolites?
Metabolites, yeah.
like, damn, I didn't even know that. And there was like another one was a 400 different types of fat. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there were 400 different types of fat.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It was crazy. I learned a lot of stuff too, man. It's all the stuff in milk. I was super impressed. And yeah, man, I already drank my half and half today. So it's part of my routine. That's part of my like secret methods that I do. You know, I usually don't tell people that, but you know, whatever. So it works, man. But yeah, that's another podcast in the books. Hope you guys liked it. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned something. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, thanks. Please rate and subscribe to our podcast. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.